everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Student Press Law Center's monthly podcast, a rundown on developments impacting student journalism at the college and high school level. I'm Frank Lamonti, Executive Director of the Student Press Law Center. You can find all of our legal and educational reference materials online at splc.org, and you can fire off any questions about your legal rights by web email, splc@splc.org. Our guest this month is Simon Galperin, a researcher from the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism in New York. He's here to talk to us about a survey that he did looking at the ecosystem for college journalism in the state of New Jersey, what kind of opportunities exist for people to publish, what sort of information safety net exists for campus communities across the state, and where are opportunities to shore up the support systems to help make journalism stronger. This is an especially timely topic because college journalists are being asked so frequently these days to be their community's primary source of information. Surveys have shown, for example, that college journalists now make up 15% of all the coverage of state capitals across the country. And college journalists often are the only journalists routinely providing that meat and potatoes beat coverage that once was provided by professional news organizations where employment has dwindled to levels not seen since the early 1970s. For all of those reasons, it's especially important, not just for students, but for everyone in college communities, to invest in the well-being of college news organizations. And Simon Galperin is here to talk with us about that work. Simon has ground himself in college journalism and has recently completed his master's at the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism and Social Media. It's a terrific program, by the way, that Carrie Brown runs at CUNY. And we'll ask Simon to talk a little bit about his own background and what he's doing now. So thanks, Simon. Why don't you introduce yourself to the audience, please?
Thanks, Frank. I really appreciate that introduction. A lot of good facts in there that I actually did not know. So I learned something new every day. Like you said, I have a background in college journalism. I studied at Rutgers University in New Brunswick in New Jersey. My undergraduate degree was in journalism and media studies. As an undergrad, I wrote for the student paper, but then I also sort of went off on my own with the other colleagues to co-found Mutgers. Mutgers Media, which was sort of an alternative news publication on campus that focused on sort of storytelling, experimentation, and investigative journalism. The name is an amalgamation of muckraking and Rutgers, so it might give you a sense of the sort of work we were doing. And then we had a good run of Mutgers, and then between then and now, I've completed my master's degree at the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism and Social Journalism. Like you said, with Carrie Brown, who is a fantastic advisor and a great program head. And when I was there, I had the opportunity to focus on the community that I had been a part of for years and serve them, which was student journalists or emerging journalists, in particular undergraduate journalists in New Jersey's public and private universities.
So you decided to do this deep dive into the state of college media in New Jersey. How'd you go about doing it? And what did you find in terms of responsiveness of people? And what was your methodology?
Sure. So the process started with me trying to understand how I could, in my position, rather in the freedom and liberty I have in the social journalism program to serve a community, how I can serve undergraduate journalists. And my first thought was to raise foundation money to support reporting fellowships, to give students the opportunity to do the sort of reporting that I had the opportunity to do, where I took out student loans in order to give myself the breadth and depth of opportunity to do those things, allow students work. Part-time work, full-time work. So I thought that, hey, how can we compensate students fairly for journalism? So we started there, and as the project began to evolve, I quickly realized that I had sort of failed to really understand the issues facing those journalists that I would like to support. So I took a step back, and we sort of pivoted to focusing on this ecosystem survey. and the methodology is sort of traditional nuts and bolts journalism, asking people for questions about how they're doing, getting in touch with different people from different walks of the industry to get a sense of how it's going, where they're from their point of view. And then the launch of a sort of digital survey to ask journalism educators and journalism students to respond back about how the department is doing, what issues they're facing, to give get my study in sort of a mass audience there.
So I should mention to folks that Simon publishes on Medium under his name Simon Galperin, and that his work is findable there. You've got a piece published December 27th of 26 titled Listening to Serve Emerging Journalists, Innovating to Redesign Journalism, which is a terrific snapshot of your research work at CUNY. And so shout out to that and encourage people to find it. Tell us what you found when you surveyed campuses around the state, and I guess how those findings measured up to your expectations in terms of the opportunities for people to participate in journalism and the types and the variations of newsrooms in which they're working and the content that they're creating.
Sure. Well, I have to say that I wish that I had more time to keep working on the project so I could really get into all the corners of the journalism ecosystem. But from what I've seen so far is that it's both vibrant and dull in some places. There are small private colleges that have no academic focus on journalism or media or even communications, but have a small staff of students who publish a PDF newsletter every month or every week. There are two, as far as my research found again, two universities in the state with a daily newspaper, that's Princeton University and Rutgers. Rutgers University has, on my count, and again with bias because I went there, 14 student media organizations, which is the highest in the state. But, all these places have similar struggles, right? Funding, ultimately, apathy from the student body in terms of participation in the news ecosystem, other stresses that students are dealing with, like having a part-time job, like their academics. Commuter schools have an interesting sort of their own set of challenges because students aren't really on campus very often. So they'll be living somewhere else and then commuting just for class. So it'll be hard to get those same students then involved in the journalism community and creating journalism around campus because they're at home, they're working a part-time job, that sort of thing. So, ultimately I found that the key is to sort of begin listening to the student journalism leaders in these on campuses, asking them what they need, and then seeing how schools, administrations, foundations, other news industry partners can support them.
One of the findings I found interesting was the lack of consistent use of available technologies to share information. There certainly are some pretty high-end programs, and you mentioned the Princetonian, of course, that are harnessing multimedia platforms and social media to get news out. But there are others that seem very much still mired in 1990s technology. Talk about that a little bit and about how you explain that. Certainly, I think people tend to think of college students as being early adopters of technology and being open to lots of experimentation, and yet that wasn't always your finding.
Sure. One of the most cringeworthy finding is oft repeated at this point, is that some media organizations still have their AOL Instant Messenger screen name on their website, which is, I think, sort of emblematic of actually the entire news industry and the entire journalism industry. We can't be surprised at the slow rate of innovation and evolution and change in newsrooms when we look at the institution's training and preparing journalists and see that they are under-resourced and under underdeveloped. I mean, and this is not to say anything of journalism educators. I've had fantastic educators in I've gone to public community college, public four-year university, and now public master's degree. So I think journalism educators are doing a fantastic job across the country, at least in my region in New Jersey and at CUNY Graduate School of Journalism. But I think that what that means is that the same innovators that are focusing on, you know, in terms of industry levels of change, getting people adapted to social, getting people adapted to video creation, we also need to be focusing the same amount of effort on the journalists serving, you know, like you said, covering 15% of state houses, rather providing 15% of the coverage of state houses. Like these future leaders, these future thought leaders and thinkers and opinion leaders need to be as prepared to do journalism tomorrow as we are focusing on preparing journalists to do journalism today.
Well, I think you have an especially interesting perspective on this issue, having worked both in what might be termed mainstream college news media and then in what might be termed an alternative startup on a college campus. And you saw firsthand the challenge and the difficulty in creating survivability when generation after generation of person working in that alternative newsroom moves on and graduate. Can you talk a little bit about that, about the unique difficulty of sustaining an entrepreneurial news organization in the college setting and what might help make those news organizations more sustainable?
Sure. And that's a good question. It's something no one has asked me. Oftentimes, that's one of those things that sort of gets glossed over in conversation around these questions because ultimately, Mucker's wasn't about me and the co-founders or the co-founders and I. It was about the student population and the community we're serving. So, ultimately, when we, you know, of the, I would say probably 85% of the content published on Mucker's and the work that went into Mucker's was done by the three or four, or at the time, five sort of managing co-founders and founders. So I think that to us, it was a passion project. It occupied most of the rest of our time outside of our academics and then our personal life. We were sort of sad to have to see it go. I mean, I would have loved to, at the time, had a set of resources and a set of and a community to fall back on and to realize that we could have turned this potentially into a business, right? Into something that would self-sustain, at least, the very least, to give other journalists an opportunity to do so. So I think that I would say to somebody who asked me, how do I avoid letting my, you know, my passion project end up being a piece of history as opposed to something that's alive and kicking, I would say begin asking the people around you that question. Begin asking your journalism your professors, your deans, your administrators, your student members of student government, your members of the local paper. Maybe they'll fold it into their editorial structure and allocate them, use some, at least some sort of oversight, and in return, students will have the opportunity still to create journalism.
One of the encouraging things about your survey is that even in places where there isn't an enormous amount of financial support, even in places where students aren't being rewarded for their journalism by college credit, people still want to tell stories and they still want to gather information and share ideas, and they're finding ways to do it, even sometimes in a very low budget, low tech way. So that's certainly a glass half full story, and I think it speaks to the enduring nature of student media in whatever form that is going to take. Talk a little bit about what you think could be done to strengthen the support structure for college media, be it the established Rutgers Daily Telegram type of news organization or the upstart news organization like a Mucker's. What do those organizations most need from their institutions and their communities?
I hate to say financial investment, but oftentimes that is the greatest struggle for a lot. I mean, it was the struggle for Rutgers. It is the struggle for the Davis program. It is the struggle for, a newspaper club in somewhere in New Jersey. Having a professor or an advisor who will oversee the process and oversee in the case of the Daily Targum, it is a nonprofit organization that oversees Targum Publishing Company that oversees the Daily Targum's printing and editorial efforts and business management. So ultimately, it is resources. It is investment. It is something like at Rutgers University, there's a student media fund, a fee of $10 per semester per student that's requested of students support student media. In the case of Rutgers, that money goes entirely to the Daily Targum at this point. There's nothing in the foreseeable future, as far as I can see, that would prevent it from going to more media publications, supporting different communities at Rutgers, uplifting the different stories at Rutgers, maybe taking, in the case of Rutgers, maybe something more of an adversarial stance or a stance that questions power structures in these communities, whether it be between the university and the community or the university and the students. So, I mean, I'd love to see something like a student media fee across campuses in New Jersey, or maybe just collaboration at the very least. You know, if I could get my hope was that I'd be able to get students from a couple of different publications in the same room, from across the state in the same room to sort of discuss their ideas, their feelings, their business plans, how they could collaborate. And that never really came to fruition, the best alternative so far is in the Facebook group that we're sort of trying to make that happen in. But again, these folks, the reason I think we see apathy in the sort of general industry towards collaboration and cooperation is that people already have a lot to do. And when they have a lot to do, they don't want to really necessarily change their process because it might be something new, something a little alien to them that they're not sure how it fits yet into the bubble. But I think that collaboration and cooperation across the ecosystem is one of the key ways to sort of fighting for representation in the media industry in general for student journalists and emerging journalists, but also in their own community.
Well, hand in hand with financial stability goes audience building. Often those two are joined at the hip because the best case that you can make for financial support is to demonstrate a market and an appetite and an audience. What are your thoughts there about audience building among the college campus community? This is certainly not something that's limited to the college media at all. This is a challenge that the professional media is struggling with, given so much competition for the reader's eyeball now, whether it be other websites, whether it be video games, whether it be apps, whether it be streaming entertainment that's now delivered right to your phone. And so this is a challenge that all levels of media are working through, but because of the opportunity to do more experimentation at the college level, it seems like everybody's looking to the college level to figure out this audience development model. Any thoughts there?
Sure. I mean, I think that the user-centered design process, which for those unfamiliar is basically a a process for innovation in which you ask a user what he or she or they need, and then deliver a product based on those needs to them. It's a really simple process, ultimately. And then you bring it back to that user, and if they don't like something, you change it until you bring back a product that they are willing to find value in and exchange something of value for that value. So I think that full disclosure, I am a public-powered journalism evangelist. I think that audiences are the greatest asset that a newsroom has. and that it is in service to them in something as simple as what do you need, what news and information do you need that we can provide, how do you want it provided to you. I think in service to them, that is how newsrooms fund both their social mission and their revenue streams.
Well, you've already built some infrastructure that provides the foundation on which to build. In addition to creating the New Jersey Student Media Stakeholders Facebook group, you've also created an online Google document that's linked through your Medium site that has sort of a census of news organizations on college campuses in New Jersey. Where does this go from here? Are you planning a future step, or now that you've moved on into the professional world, is this a baton for somebody else to pick up and run with?
I mean, I'd love for it to be the baton for someone to pick up and run with. I think that the point of my work ultimately was to sort of perhaps be a roadmap for another institution in another state or also New Jersey, some process, some sort of sense of this is how I ask student journalists about how they're doing. This is how I survey journalism education to see how we can make it better. And I think that if in my lifetime somebody asks those same questions of a group of journalism students, I will have felt like I succeeded in my work. In regard to this project, but I mean, ultimately, my efforts have sort of shifted as well into some audience engagement work I'm doing, you know, in my quote-unquote professional career, and a few passion projects that I'm excited for as well.
Well, I hope you do stay involved in a supporting role in the work of College Media. In addition to giving a shout out to Simon Galperin's site on Medium, I'd also like to invite those interested in the welfare of journalism in New Jersey to check out the Facebook group for New Voices of New Jersey. New Jersey is one of the priority targeted states for the New Voices movement to pass statutes that protect the independence of college and high school journalism. And New Jersey is a state where there has been documented adversity, both at the college and at the high school level, that has interfered with students' ability to effectively gather and report news. It's something that New Voices is committed to changing, and there are excellent Senate and House sponsors already lined up for a bill in 2017 that shows some promise of advancing. 10 states now have these statutes, up from just 7 2 years ago, and there's every reason to be optimistic that more will join in 2017. So Simon Galperin, I just want to thank you for the work that you've done through your research at the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism, and I encourage those interested in the work to seek it out through Medium and to get in touch with the Student Press Law Center if you've got any questions about your legal rights as a student journalist. We're online at splc.org, reachable through email, splc@splc.org, or at Twitter @splc. Thanks so much for listening to this monthly podcast, and we'll be back at you next month.